Welcome to What's Your Poison? This is John Savage. You can go to johnsavage.com to see all the episodes, the many, many episodes. Also, please rate, subscribe, and share because it'll be good for my ego. What's Your Poison is proudly brought to you by Whiskey Brother. WhiskeyBrother.com. They make great whiskeys. They sell them. You buy them. You drink them. WhiskeyBrother.com. I get scared whenever I have to say mom, but it's going to be necessary for this episode. I don't know if you heard last week, Kevin Caveman Shirley, one of the global producer. What an episode. I highly recommend if you haven't heard that one, you should check it out. It's one of the most incredible, maddest stories. And this week, you know, the pioneer of mom, did I do it? Hate myself sometimes. I love this guy, man. I've been watching him for a long time, seeing how he moves. Such a humble, sweet, real guy, like a type of guy you wish there were more of in the industry. You know, a couple of his, he was at the Grammys. He is a really sweet stories about his family. He's a real family guy, quiet guy, just into his music and his family. I just loved chatting to him. And great stories about Beyonce and about how will.i.am stole his song and now he had to, you know, handle that situation. And he's one of the, you know, the main dude behind the track My Power, which is for me like an absolute anthem around my house with Moonchild, Sinelli, DJ Lag, and Beyonce. You've got to know that tune. And many others, many others. What a wonderful dude. That's what I want to tell you. Great story, and I hope you enjoy this episode of What's Your Poison. This is DJ Lag. Blasi.
How are you, man?
Hey! Nice to meet you. How you doing?
I'm good, and you?
Lovely to meet you, bro. It's I've been dying to chat to you for the longest time. How you been?
I'm good, man. Yeah, just trying to get busy, trying to finish my album.
What were you working on when I walked in there?
I was just trying to create something while I was waiting for you.
and how far did you get?
I'm starting because I was just finishing to eat dinner and yeah, I just came into the studio to talk to you.
Dude, well, welcome to the podcast. So excited to have you here. Let's start with the most important question. What are we drinking tonight?
Yeah, on my laptop.
What do you got? You got beer? What is in there? Did you say beer?
Yeah.
Beer in a cup. Okay. I am drinking this Irish whiskey called Peaky Blinder. I don't know if you saw the TV show Peaky Blinder. I don't think it's related, but I just like it because I think it might be.
I've never seen it before.
Anyway, I'll let you know how it goes. What beer are you drinking?
It's Corona.
Corona. All right. Well, cheers to you, man. And thanks for being here.
Away.
All right, I want to start by asking you, I don't know what you can and can't say, but I got to know the will.i.am story.
yeah, we can talk about it.
Let's go. I just want to know, just tell me the story of like, okay, what did you, first of all, how did he get your beat? That's the first thing. Second of all, how did you find out about it? Third of all, you don't have to, I'm sure the stuff in there you can't talk about, but like, I just want to know how it all unfolded from your perspective.
Yeah. So it started when, first of all, I didn't even know about the track. And yeah. I think there was like two people who sent me a link of the music video.
And sorry to interrupt. Was there another story before this as well around the same track?
No.
Okay.
It was a different track with Destruction Boys.
Oh yes, the Destruction. So this wasn't the same one.
No. It's not the same one.
Okay.
That was Ice Drop.
Okay. Yeah, carry on. I won't interrupt again.
Yeah. So it started. So they sent me the links, and I didn't actually open them at first. And then when I got home, I got bored, and then I started checking my DMs, and then that's when I saw the link. And when I listened to the track on my phone, it wasn't sounding clear. And then I had to check it on YouTube on my TV. That's when I heard, no, this is Ice Drop, you know.
I called
my manager, Sylvia, told her about this, and then I sent her the link. And at the same time, she recognized the track, because like he used like the original track to sample it to his track, and he was producing the track for this girl. What's the name? Yeah, I can't remember the name, but yeah, Will.i.am produced the track for that girl, and yeah, that's how it happened.
And then, so what happened from there? You had to, because at first what I saw was like on Twitter, he kind of said, he didn't apologize. He kind of said, oh, what did he, what, carry on with the story. What happened next?
And then when I posted, so I took a video of the music video, put it on my stories. And then same time, the video was all over.
You dropped a bomb.
Yeah, so I went to bed early that night, and when I woke up early, my phone was buzzing, like Instagram, Twitter, everything, everywhere. And then when I checked, it was about this Will.i.am track. So like overnight, I think some people in America and some people in other countries saw the track and they started talking about it. And it became bigger and bigger. And then I think that thing was happening for like 3 days or 4 days. Mm. People were talking about it. And then my manager, Sevi, started talking to, I don't remember the record label's name, but they started talking to Will.i.am's manager and all of them. And Will.i.am wanted to talk to me, but my manager said, no, we have to fix this first before you even talk to Leg. And yeah, everything was easy to sort it out. They saw that they were wrong, and they wanted to fix it before everything became that big, and then they couldn't fix it. It was already late.
Okay, so basically, on a business level, it all gets sorted out. I'm not asking for juicy details. I'm asking because I'm interested. So, do you have a piece of the publishing of that track now?
No,
his track.
The track was removed from everywhere.
Oh, it was removed. So, okay.
Yeah.
And then, did you ever get to speak to Will.i.am one-on-one?
No, I haven't spoken to him.
Oh,
I still want to speak to him and maybe try and do something with him, you know?
Yeah, bro, you can say, hey, listen, you don't need to steal my track. You can just ask me.
Yeah, I don't know why people do that, you know?
And it's amazing. It's the second time. Yeah, it seems to be I'll give you some advice. Just don't make as dope tracks, and then no one will steal them.
I can't stop doing.
Cool, man. I mean, it's very, very amazing. I mean, you must feel flattered at least or something about that.
I am proud of myself, man, to see like Will.i.am trying to make what I made like 4 years back, you know. It's really crazy.
Mm. Cool. So tell me a little bit about, I know you were, you know, as a lot of young DJs, actually, football was your first love, right?
Yeah.
So tell me about your football almost career.
So I started like doing football because my father was a soccer player, but he wasn't in like a professional level, but he was working on that, and then he passed away when I was like 11 months. And I always like trying to be like my father when I was growing up. And because my mom always tell me what my father's used to do, and you know, I always try to be like him, you know. And so I don't think I was good in soccer, so I think I played soccer for like 5 or 6 years, and I got an injury on my ankle, and that's when I decided, you know what, let me just stop, because I know I'm not even good on what I'm doing in soccer. So yeah, that's when my mom got me like a PlayStation, and then he got me a computer. And when he got me a computer, my cousin is a rapper, and he was the one who used to take me to his studio where he used to record. And I used to watch, there's this guy called MZ, he lives in Claremont. I still work with him now. He used to record my cousin, and that's the guy who gave me the software FL Studio. But I didn't know anything about producing. I just took the software and then I started installing it on my computer. And then I started trying to produce beats for my cousin, hip hop beats. And then I think I did hip hop for like, maybe like a year, I think. And then he stopped rapping first, and then I was left making beats on. And then hip hop wasn't like the best thing for me. And then I ended up making Kwaito beats. And then from Kwaito beats, I made like Tribal House. I was confused. I was like making everything. And when I first heard a Chrome track, it was by Naked Boys. And at that time, it wasn't called Igum. There wasn't a name of the gender. And Naked Boys, they were the first ones who made that sound. And there was a track called Ito Easy, which was released under, I think, DJ Sindo's album.
Mm.
Yeah, that track was big. And then I think that was the first track that I had, which was Broken Beats. And I always tried to make something that was similar to that track. And yeah, I think that's how Gome came about, because I was trying to make something that was similar to that track. Even the other guys, I asked Rude Boys, how did you guys start making Gome? They also told me that they were trying to make that track. I think most of the DJs were trying to do that.
So it was that one track you think sparked the whole revolution, and all of you guys were just trying to recreate the sound. And just describe, you said Broken Beats. Describe the sound. Describe what you thought you heard that you were trying to create that you hadn't heard before.
Yeah, we used to listen to Kwaito, Big Nas, and DJ Tira. So those beats were straight. They were like four beats. And with that track, it was different. It was like... And then, yo, that blew my mind. I wanted to do something like that. Like, and then when I started making that sound, my music started being played like everywhere in Durban. And then that's when I started sticking on Gone.
I'm abusing you with this just because I see you have a keyboard there. Can you explain it? Explain the history lesson from Kwaito right through, you know, even up to I'm a Piano, if you can, using the keyboard to differentiate the different beats and styles, just so that this pleb can understand. Can you do that?
For I'm a Piano, I don't know much about it, but I'm slowly learning how to produce.
But you understand the grooves, right?
Yeah. Basically, I'm a Piano, they're more, I think, more like Kwaito beats.
Yeah.
London funk, you know, you remember that type of music?
Yeah,
I think it sounds the same, you know. It's slow, melodic with chords and all of that, and with Gom it's different, you know.
Hit the buttons
off.
Oh, it's off. It's off. I thought it was on, sorry. Okay.
So yeah, with Gom it's different. It's all about the bass, all about the kick, you know. And it's faster than my piano. It sounds more like techno for me.
Yeah. Cool. And then I have this question's always been on my mind. I know, I know that a lot of the, you know, emerging artists use WhatsApp as a distribution, which is amazing. And I know you did that early on, but it's not that simple, because how you get, you know, you have to get all those numbers onto a WhatsApp group. How are you actually distributing, or you're just sending it to your friends and they're sending it to someone else? How are you creating that space in WhatsApp?
I think now it's hard to do that, but back then WhatsApp was still new. And before we even had WhatsApp, we had this thing we had on Blackberries. I don't remember the name. BBM.
Oh, BBM. Yeah.
We used to have group chats on BBM, and we used to exchange links from Kasi MP3, maybe on Tassafile Host. And then we all the producers will exchange tracks. And there's also going to be people who just wants to download the tracks just to have them. Mm-hmm. There's going to be like maybe like 5,000 people on that group, you know, and that worked. Wow. You know, because it was easy. You can make a track today and then maybe tonight, like later tonight, you still release the track and then everybody will have it, you know.
It's cool. Awesome. And then Black Major, who you've spoken about a few times already. They spotted you quite early, didn't you? They know how to find talent, and they've obviously been a big part of your career, right? Yeah. Tell me about meeting them and the role that Sevi's played in. I mean, I know Sevi, she is tough as nails, brilliant negotiator, powerful. Like, if you're on Team Sevi, you're in a good place, right?
Yeah, she's like my mom. She really takes good care of me. Sometimes that she isn't supposed to be doing as a manager, you know, but she always treats me like her own son, you know, and I really love her support. It started in 2015, when I wasn't signed at Black Major, and they sent me a message. There was this guy called Andrew who was working with Black Major. I went to Cape Town. There was this show I was performing with Okimalum Cool Cats. It was called Party Time Shandies. And Andrew was at that show and he saw me perform. And it was my first time in Cape Town. And Andrew sent me a message telling me that G-Star and Boiler Room are coming down and they want to shoot a documentary about new genres in South Africa. And at that time, I didn't understand anything he was telling me. But I was like, okay, yeah, sure. Yeah, let's do it, you know. And I didn't think it was G-Star, like the huge brand, because I used to buy G-Star like all the time when I was young. And when the day of the shoot came, they had like boxes full of clothes, G-Star clothes, and I had my friends there. When they saw me removing all those G-Star clothes, everybody was going crazy at home. We shot the documentary, I think like for 2 days or 3 days in Durban. And then they told me that they want to work with me. And it was the first time I got like a big check. I don't want to say how much was it, but it was a lot of money that I got. And I wasn't even signed at Black Major at that time.
How old were you? Like 20?
I was 19 years, I think.
Oh, you're a kid, man.
Yeah. yeah. And I just finished my matric at that year. So I started making money the next year. And I signed with Black Major 2015. I started getting shows like in Joburg, Cape Town. And 2016, I started going on my first international tour. So everything
right
as fast, you know, working with Black Major was a blessing for me, man. I can't even explain it.
Where were you playing overseas?
For my first tour, it was crazy. I went everywhere. I think the tour was like 2 months. We went to Japan, China, Italy, Poland, Switzerland, London. That's so crazy. And I was traveling with this guy called Nankole.
Was it? Was this a Black Major? Did Black Major take you on this tour?
No, it was a GOM All tour.
Oh, that tour. Yeah. Sorry, carry on. Yeah.
Oh, so yeah, I was traveling with Nankole. And yeah, for me to travel from South Africa to go to Italy for the first time and traveling by myself, it was scary. You know, from to travel from here to Dubai, and then from Dubai I have to connect, and I wasn't even that good with connecting flights. You know, and I made it to Italy. He was waiting for me at the airport, and then he took good care of me for 2 months. Shout out to Nankole.
Wow, that is a incredible introduction to the global music scene.
Yeah, man, yeah. So it's crazy.
How did, for me, one of my greatest anthems, and it's so, I don't know who did what on it, but that... that My Power track is so fucking dynamite. Like, we play it all the time in this house.
Thank you, man.
There's so many people on it, though. Can you tell me what on the track you did? Because that song is by far the best track. I mean, I say this with, I'm not just saying this. I say this absolutely truthfully. The weakest link on that track is Beyonce. That track is so fucking hot. And then when she comes on, it kind of like softens it, and then it goes back and gets it again. Like, she's kind of not necessary, but it's amazing that it's on her album so that the world got to see it. I'd love to know more about how that collab happened.
Yo man, when that started, I didn't even believe it, because I just came back from my American tour. It was 2018, I think. Yeah, 2018 December. I was back from a two-month tour. I remember I started touring, I think, around like October until November. And then I came back in December, and Beyonce was coming down for Global Citizen. And when she was performing, I wasn't even watching the show on TV. And I had my friends at my place, and we were just drinking, you know, partying. We didn't even know what was happening on TV. And then I had my phone on aux cable, and I was playing music on speakers. And I started getting like messages like ding 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 at the same time. Ding 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 ding. So I got texts from like Instagram, Twitter, and then I had to check. And when I checked, there was a video of Beyonce playing Trip to New York on her performance. Yo. Yo. We were all going crazy in the house. I couldn't even sleep that day. the next day, there's this guy who works with Beyonce called Kwasi, and he messaged Nankole that he wants my number. He wants to go to Durban the next day after Global Citizen. And then Nankole gave him my number, and Kwasi gave me a call the next day. Yo, I didn't believe it at first when he called me. I was like, he was like, yeah, I'm Kwasi. I work with Beyonce, and I really want to meet you. I'm coming down to Durban. Hey, but you know, I saw the video, and then I had to believe it, that this is real, you know. And I remember I was meeting him, and I was on my way to go to the airport. I was going to Australia that day, and then I had to go meet Kwasi, and then I sent him some music. He told me Beyonce is working on the album and she wants some beats and she loves my music. I was like, Beyonce loves my music. I didn't know that. And then I gave him
at least she had the courtesy of asking.
Yeah. Then I gave him like 5 tracks, and they kept quiet for like, I think for like 2 or 3 months. And they came back, I think, around April, and they told me that they loved drumming. And I told Sylvia they like, and then they started talking about the track that, okay, there's a possibility that they're going to use drumming. And then they kept quiet again. And in June, there was a tour I was doing in America, and I had like a week where I was not doing anything, and then my manager said, he said, I think you should just go to LA and see if you can try and finish the track at the studio in LA. And then Savvy spoke to them that I'm in America, and then they said, okay, yeah, I have to come down to LA. And then I went down to LA. They already recorded Beyonce's verse, and Moonchild recorded in South Africa, and Busisa also recorded. Everybody recorded in different places.
And over your beat.
Yeah. And then they sent me like all the voices to put them all together. And then they moved the track and they gave it to another producer who will do all the mastering and all of that to finish it all up. But they used like the whole beat of drumming.
And what did you think when you first heard that track?
I was amazed that they would do something like that. I never even think that Beyonce would be on a comm track. Like, yo, I never thought of that.
Dude, you are living total rock star life over there. That is so cool. Amazing.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Yo.
God, favorite collabs you've ever done?
My favorite, obvious, Beyonce.
Worst collab you've ever done?
Oh my god. Worst one was the one I did back in the days with this guy called Soto B. The track was called Linguada Macavela. I don't think you find the track.
What made it bad? Was it the song itself or just the experience?
Yeah, I think I was new on trying to put vocals on the drum track, and the whole track was just bad. I don't know how.
You do such, you know, how much when you do these productions and these collabs, I mean, obviously, with the exception of the Beyonce one, how much of the time are you working in the room with the person and guiding them on vocals and putting production ideas? And how much of it is that you put the beat or you put the production down and you send it to someone and they just do it?
I hardly see two people in the studio and finish the whole track. I just create a beat in my studio and then send it to you. And then you can record from your side and then send it back. That's it. Yeah.
Cool. And can you tell me, I know this is a hard question, a little bit about like what inspires you to make music? You know, everyone has a different way of doing it. Are you just sort of playing? Some people work very quickly. Some people are very pedantic and spend hours until the kick drum is exactly right and all of that stuff. What are you looking for when you start playing?
I don't plan. I just play around with sounds. You know, I just have like my whole packs, like the whole pack set and then the plugins and everything. I would just put everything and then try and create something with what I just selected, you know. I don't plan the track. It just happens. I don't know how I can.
Cool. Tell me a bit then about the album that you're working on. What your approach is and what we can expect from you.
This album is more focusing on like South Africa. I think it's because like ever since I started, like ever since my name became big, I've been busy overseas and in South Africa. Like ever since the pandemic started, it was the first time for me, like, it was the first time from a long time where I sat down in the studio and I always made music on the road, like on a plane or at hotels, you know. Last year, it was the first time where I sat down and started making music in the studio, you know, have people come to the studio sometimes, work with them, you know. And that's when I decided, you know, I just want to make a full-length album. For the first time, I've been releasing like EPs, so I think it's time now to release a full album.
How many tracks?
We haven't decided yet. I'm just making a lot of tracks, and then you're going to start selecting all the best.
But how do you know? Sorry, carry on.
I think 15 tracks is going to work.
That's... How do you know when an album is done?
I don't know. It's my first time doing an album. Yo, man, it's hard work since last year. Yo.
Do you work fast and furious and then you're happy, or are you someone who sits there and agonizes over a tiny little part for days?
I first create a beat when I'm alone, I will make like a bunch of beats, and then maybe around on weekends when I have my friends, I'll just sit to them and just play all the tracks that I've been making in a week. And then if they have something to tell me, no, you know, add this, add that, you know, maybe let's do this, let's do that. Or if the track is okay, it's okay. You know, that's how I always do it. But I can't sit with people in the studio and finish the whole track. I don't know how. I think it's because I'm used to being alone when I'm making music ever since I started.
Do you split your publishing royalties with all your friends then?
I always take them to shows for free.
That'll do. And maybe they get a few G-Star pants on the side.
Yeah, sometimes.
Can you tell me a bit about your life outside of music? Like, who are you? What do you like? What's your family? What are your friends?
I am a family person, man. I just got my son in 2017.
So, nice. So what's that? Yeah. That makes him four.
He's four now. And, ever since I have a child, you know, that motivates me to work even harder, you know, because I have a son now. And it was hard for me when I had the son in 2017 because I was always on tours. I couldn't even spend like a week with my son. And since last year, I've been with him and I've been with my family. And last year, I also lost my granny. So now I'm taking care of like six cousins who I'm left with. And yeah, I'm the oldest. So yeah, it's quite hard, but you know, we try.
So I want to go a bit deeper into, so first of all, the pandemic's actually been, how's the pandemic treated you? I mean, one of the things you're saying is that you got to spend a whole year now with your kid at a really crucial age. That 3 to 4 year is like the best time to have dad around.
Yeah. All right, for me, when the pandemic started, I was happy. because I needed a break, man. It was like 4 years. Back and forth, you know, on tours, never had a break. And when they told me like 21 days of lockdown, I was like, okay, yeah, that's fine. I'm good with that. And, it became worse. And then my show started getting canceled. It became serious. And then I wasn't really that scared. How can I put this? I wasn't afraid like something bad was going to happen to me or anything, because I had my family with me like all the time. I told my mom to come to my place. I had my mom, my son, my cousins, everyone in the house. So I didn't think that there was something bad was going to happen, because we're all in the same house. We're not living, you know?
And then, and just sort of being around your family for that year?
Having them like for a year, I think I needed that, man. I think I needed that. So I remember when I was on tours, I used to always call them like every day on video calls or do voice notes. I wasn't texting on WhatsApp. When I'm back home, when I'm here, I don't use my WhatsApp. But every time when I'm on tour, I always have my phone with me. Speaking to my family, you know, I always miss them, and having to spend like a year with them was really special for me.
Are you quite a shy guy who just likes to sort of do his own thing?
Yeah.
Or
yeah. I think you've noticed that before. Everybody, and you know, I am a shy guy. Yo, I think it's really hard for me. I don't know. It's quite hard to meet new people. I like to be with just the friends that I grew up with. You know, it's hard to make new friends. You know, I always try, but yo, I can't do it. I don't know why.
And what is your kid into? And what's he like?
My son.
Yeah.
He likes playing video games. He loves video games a lot.
That's the problem, man. The one thing about this pandemic, it's got our kids fucking glued to
video games.
Because they couldn't be with their friends. Now that they are like deep in that, getting them off their games is so hard.
I can see my son, it's going to be hard for him to go to school for the first time without video games. Mm. Yo.
Woo, you got a challenge ahead. Do you want more kids?
Nah, I think I'm good.
Nah.
I'm okay with Kanye. Yeah, I don't need another child. Mm-mm. I think it's too much work.
Has he sat in, you know, I always have this memory. There's two things. It was once I was in a kung fu class with this old guy, and his kid was like two or three, not even. And his kid was in the classroom, and everything we did, like he would do, he just was immersed in that world. And I remember when I once did a project with MT, his fucking kid was like four or three, busting rhymes, doing moves, like because he was just always around that world. He was just so is your kid in your world, or is he very safely outside of it
all the time? If I go to the studio, he will hear music when he's downstairs. If he hears music, he'll start running. You know, I always have him here. He'll try and play something all the time, you know. Yeah, but I always try, and if I'm really busy, I'll just tell him, yo, go play video games. But sometimes I leave him here at the studio, let him try and play something, you know, and just record him. And then I'll listen to it when he's done.
Have you got a little folder with all his little tracks that he's made?
I've used like a small, he played something and then I used it on one track.
Oh man, that's beautiful.
Yeah, I wish him to be a producer one day. I'm gonna try and make him a producer.
Well, I mean, I think he is already, it sounds like. So earlier you were telling me like your dad was a football player and you really wanted to be a football player, but it didn't work out for you. How did you know he was a footballer?
My mom used to tell me about it, and I had these photos of him with his old team and these trophies. My granny used to tell me that he was a good footballer, and I always tried to be like him.
This is going to be a weird question, but how do you, if you didn't have your relationship with your father, what's your approach to being a dad?
You know, I always try to be with my son, like, every time, like all the time, you know, because I've never had a father before, and I tried, you know, my mom and my granny, they played that role of being parents, you know, and they made me the man that I am right now. So I want to try and make my child the person that I am also, you know, without doing anything wrong.
And sisters and brothers?
I have a sister. They're also young. They're still in primary school. Yeah, I'm the oldest in the family.
And do they live with you?
No, they live with my mom in Claremont. I live alone in my place, but
Oh, cool.
I always come and see them all the time during the week.
Where is mom going? Like, where is it? Because it's kind of in a very interesting point where there's so many things that are changing and transforming, and you've been there since the beginning. So what is its role, and how do you take it further?
So, yeah, music has changed in South Africa. Home has slowed down because my piano, it's in speed now, you know. Everybody loving my piano, also love my piano, also produce. I'm trying to produce on my piano, but I'm a Gqom king. I always stick into Gqom. My album is gonna be a Gqom album, and but there's gonna be some changes on my Gqom. You know, I think now everybody's in a low pace, low tempo. Everybody's moving smooth, like on a piano. Even with the Gqom track, it's not gonna be that faster now. It's gonna be slower, but still have that Gqom feeling. Just wait for the album, you're gonna hear what I'm talking about.
Bro, I'm excited, man. You don't have a
Sure.
release date because or because you are you just do you have a time frame?
August, but we don't know the exact dates, but it's in August.
Who are your musical idols?
For me, before I started traveling, I was looking up to DJ Tira, DJ Bongz, you know, all those Durban guys that are who were famous at that time, you know. And those guys, I always thought that I wanted to be like them, you know. I wanted to be on their level, and everything just changed for me. You know, I started playing overseas, and I started seeing new people that I look up to, like DJ Snake. DJ Snake now is one of the people that I look up to. I want to be like that guy. I want to do shows, big shows like him. You know, I'm working on it.
Whose numbers on your phone are you proud to have there?
Woo!
Woo!
MIA?
What?
Who
Did you just
else?
say Diplo?
Yeah.
Okay, how?
Who else? Yeah, I think those are the best, the
Okay,
biggest.
have you got your phone on you or am I on it?
Yeah, you on it. I'm using
All
it
right.
right now.
What's the last message you sent to MIA?
Woo! I'll have to send you a screenshot of that. I don't remember.
That's amazing. Amazing. I
Mm-hmm.
mean, you obviously like you have made that sound like popular in the world. You've managed to find, and maybe it's partly because you did a lot of touring overseas to sort of take this really grungy, cool sound and turn it into something that actually has global relevance. You think that's the role that you've played?
Yeah, I think I really helped the Gqom scene to be recognized overseas. Because if I didn't do those tours, maybe Gqom still people wouldn't understand what's that sound. Maybe they will know the tracks, but I think some people need to feel maybe like a DJ set, like a whole set of that music. And I think I did a lot. And you know, Gqom is it's big now, you know. And I'm here, I'm gonna make it go even bigger than this, you know. Yeah.
Rock and roll, man.
Sure.
What is the hardest thing that you've had to overcome in your life that has been the challenge that you thought maybe you wouldn't get through that is turned you into the person you are today? Like, you know, there's that thing that actually made you become the DJ Lag that stands here now.
I think, yeah, Yeah, that's a tough one. I think being different helped me. You know, there were a lot of bomb producers who were doing better than me at that time. When I started working with Blake Major, when I started doing those tours overseas, there were still big artists than me. Like Destruction Boys, they had like a song of the year. There was Tipsy, there was a lot of guys who were doing gone, who were bigger than me. But I think being different helped me be DJ like that I am right now. And it helped me a lot.
What makes you different? What is your approach to your music that's different?
My goal is it's way different from the guys, like the goal that the guys are making. I think I'm still using the same style that I was doing.
Hang on, I'm not. Your sound is very different and definitive. I'm not asking about the music. I'm asking about you. Why is your approach different?
I think I always just want to sound different, man. I always try new sounds. And with the traveling, I've been listening to different genres and trying to put all that into one sound. And you can hear on my last EP that I released under Diplo's label, Uhuru, there was this track called Uhuru This. The beat, you can hear it. It sounds similar to ballet funk.
Yes.
And it's gone, you know. Traveling taught me and listened to it and tried to mix it up with gone.
Cool. So I just want to go back to this question. It's important that I just don't want to let it go about the biggest obstacle. Because you said the question you answered was what makes you was like what's helped you, but the question I wanted to know is like what event or thing in your life was an obstacle that you had to really fight to get past to become you.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was a family thing, whether it was a record label thing, whether it was a bully at school, whether it was whatever it was, we all succeed by having to fight against something, an obstacle.
Yeah. 2016. Yeah. No, I think 2017. Yeah, 2017. I was working with Blake Major for, I think, like 2 years. And I think I felt comfortable working with them and I wasn't taking my work serious. And I started not going to shows. And I was partying a lot with friends. Like every time when I'm back on tour, I was, partying nonstop. Sometimes I even forget that I have a show the next day. I wouldn't go to the show and I missed like big shows. And I think it's just because I was still young and everything was just starting and I thought that I have everything, you know. And then I started making mistakes. I didn't go to the show Opikopi. This was a big show, Opikopi, that was done by Red Bull. And I think that was like one of the biggest mistakes I did in my life. And Red Bull started not putting me to shows because of that. And that's when I realized, I had to start taking my work seriously, I have to stop partying, I have to focus on my work and get everything straight. And since then, I've never missed a flight, never missed a show. I'm focused,
Did someone have to give you a talking to, or did you realize it yourself? Or how did you realize that was a big mistake?
Sammy, she gave me a big talk.
What did she say?
Yo, she was like a parent, and I had to understand, I had to listen. I saw that I was going in the right direction. Missing like 3 shows in a row is not good.
And you just, that was it. That's all you took. You bucked it up and off you went. The new DJ Lag arrived.
I was back, same time. I think I needed that.
Okay, I'm going to nearly let you go. A couple of just questions that are popping into my mind, and the one is, what music do you just not get? I wanted to ask you, actually, the question I wanted to ask you, but I thought it would be unfair, is like, which artists do you think are getting way too much praise and are not actually doing a good job? But I thought that might put you in a difficult position. You can't answer that, so I thought.
No. I don't wanna cause any beefs.
No. I'm not trying to do that. So I'm giving you an easier question, and that is, what music do you not get? Like, what do you not understand why people dig it?
Just don't remember the name, but there's this genre where I always come across when I'm on festivals. It's just, I don't remember the name, but it's just a lot of noise played in, like, distorting noise playing on speakers. Do you remember? Do you know the name of that?
Is it guitars or is it keyboards?
They have like drum pads, and they will put like USB cords and remove them, put it in and remove them.
What? Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about.
And they're playing, like, everything is just distorting, and that's the genre. That's the music that they listen to. That's what they make.
And what are the people in the audience doing? Are they dancing, or are they going like, this is amazing, or are they sleeping?
They're dancing to it. Yeah, in Europe, all the time, like in festivals, there'll always be one person who's going to be playing that. I just don't understand it. It's just noise.
And what do you listen to that, what kind of music do you listen to that you think people would think is surprising that you listen to it?
Hip hop.
Why? People wouldn't believe you listen to hip hop.
Yeah. I think they think that if you make gum, you don't listen to hip hop, or you don't. Yeah. I don't know why, but I listen to hip hop a lot.
Cool. All right. Last two questions, and then I will let you have a life beyond me. It may seem that that you are a prisoner, but I will let you go. Okay. The question I have to ask everyone is, now that you understand the format of the show, it's pretty random. There's whiskey involved. Who do you think would make a great guest for this show? Who do you think has a great story? Who that's like has a cool vibe that you think could do well on the show?
Yeah, I think you should try Anticipated Sounds. Oh my god.
Anticipated Sounds.
Yeah.
What did you?
The new guys who are making gum, they from Newlands here in Durban. They're really dope.
And what are they doing that's so cool?
The music is really crazy. It's a new level of gum that they're making, the new sounds. Yo, it's really crazy. And I did a track with those guys. It's called Amaniginig. You should check it out. And there's gonna be more tracks I'm gonna be releasing with them which are gonna be on the album. So yeah, wait on that.
Favorite moment of your whole career so far?
Favorite moment? Going to the Grammys.
Not allowed to. What the? Oh, fuck. You know what? I spoke to Sebi when you guys were at the Grammys. Oh, it was for My Power. It was for the Beyonce thing. Yeah, Tell me about the Grammys in detail, and then you were allowed to leave.
It's experience, man. It was crazy. Walking on the red carpet, seeing all these celebrities that you always see on TV. And, you know, I can't explain it, man.
Who did you see and who did you speak to? Who did you meet? Give me a couple of juicy.
I couldn't speak with anyone because my seats were on the upper level. So all the guys who were nominated, they were all sitting down here. All Beyonce's and all the people who were nominated. And all the people who were invited, they were sitting on the upper level, so you can't really talk to them dancing. You can see them, and when you're walking in, you can even see them.
But what an amazing experience. I don't know anyone else who's actually been to the Grammys. You're the only person I know. That's incredible.
Man, it was amazing. It was amazing. Next time I want to be nominated with my name there, and I want to take the award.
It doesn't sound like you're far away. Lwazi, your career is incredible. I love watching what you're doing from afar. Like I said, I've been trying to get this interview for the longest time. So excited that I got you on here. Please, you're putting this country on the map in such an important way. Keep doing what you're doing. I'm so honored that I got an hour to spend with you. And thank you. Thank you very much for being on What's Your Poison. Oh, and one thing before you go, please send me, I'm going to put it on this video. Sure. I just want to see it. I want to see the screenshot of the last message you sent to either MIA or Diplo, whichever one is most interesting. Okay. And then people can see it.
Right. I'll do that.
Awesome. Have a wonderful evening, and great respect to you, and thank you for your time, and thanks for being on What's Your Poison, my man.
Thank you, man. Thanks for being here.
If you enjoyed this episode of What's Your Poison, you're pretty cool, because it was fucking great. Do us a favor and subscribe either on the Apple Store, the Spotify Store, wherever you are. Leave a comment, please. Let me say it again, because you probably just skipped over it. Just leave a comment, because it helps with the ratings, and I would appreciate it. Also, go to johnsavage.com if you want to see all the rest of the episodes, or subscribe to my newsletter. The end.